Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is a channel, Sports in Depth is a show. John Coltrane, Dear Lord, opens up all our shows. Coltrane, Dear Lord, greatest tenor saxophone player in the world of jazz. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. We thank you for little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for blessings unseen, unheard of, and that are on the way. We ask you, Lord, not to give us so much what we want, but give us what we need. We thank you, dear Lord. As I heard a man once pray that although we do not live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we do not live on a park bench. A lady once said, you're God all by yourself. Amen. And although you may not be everybody's God, you are God. Thank you for the Jesus that died on the cross that we may have the right to the tree of life. We ask that you guide, strengthen, and lead us. And we thank you, dear Lord, for every ounce and power of our being. In the name of your darling son, Jesus. Amen. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports in Depth is the show. I think I hear the posse. Come from far and wide. Here they come from far and wide. And they're all here. We got Mel Smith Jr. And I think we got, is this Ray, that you? Okay, hey, a little music in the background.
Was that
Doctor? I thought that was Ray. We got a special guest going to join us in a little while. Gentleman from the Hispanic Hall of Fame. So I was just thinking, he's over at the office of Ralph Paliago, who had a special screening last night of, well, there was the 24/7 HBO episode, and from a Latin perspective, and I believe Ray, are you with us? Hello. Okay, I thought I had Ray in the background. Man, I think it is Ray. I'm around floor, I'm seeing a little Latin music. Also,
let me add, Doc, that 24/7 thing. If you're referring to the Muscle Junior, here, by the way.
No.
If you're referring
Ronnie, right now, after your tirade the other day, you're now Little Mel Cosell.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it. No, Doc, that Margarito Cotto 24/7 series has been excellent, in my opinion, so far.
Yo, last night, Ralph Paliago, one of the legendary Latin names in boxing, guy who started out working with Don King and elevated to a status of his own unique credibility and status in this game. He had a screening over on the west side, one of the top clubs around. And Sophia, we missed you. Where were you at last night, Sophia? Mia, Dios, Mia, more. And it was the 24/7 in Espanol, Margarito and Cotto. Unique place, you know, Ralph. They had Hennessy flowing. Nothing you could drink didn't have Hennessy in it if you were there last night. And I want to thank Ralph for the invitation, him and Sophia. And got a nice little bag they were able to get one, too, for Lady H. Destino, baby, Lois is with us. Destino?
Yes.
Harold Weston Jr.
Doc, did you say Sophia or was it Sofritos?
No, I said Sophia. It's a lady's name. It wasn't nothing I was eating.
I thought you meant the name of the restaurant.
No. This was, in fact, I'll pick up the name. It was,
It
was on 135th Street, right off of the west side, right off of Riverside Drive. I think I'll go back and look up the name of the club.
Yeah, okay.
We got Mel Harold Western should be joining with us. C-Wing should be joining with us also. And also, C-Wing, I think that's about we got us Ray from the Latin Hispanic Baseball Hall of Fame. We were originally going to do an in-depth thing on the complexion, the Latin connection, amazing baseball, but I wasn't able to grab a hold of the guest. He was couldn't commit today, so we'll try to get some of that next week. And I'm going to try to do probably bring Harvey Farmer back with his book, and also George Vesey, who did a book on Stanley Man Musial, Stanley Frank Musial, and then also try to get my man Ian O'Connor, who did a book on the only Yankee to reach 3,000, the greatest shortstop in history of the Yankees, Derek Sanderson Jeter. J-E-T-S Jets, a huge win today. And Larry Hardesty talked about some things, too, that are going to be quite revealing. I mean, you know, when you talk about Larry Hardesty, and I always say to people, we always said Larry Hardesty is the greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City radio. And longevity. The number one guy, Hal Jackson. Okay, Hal Jackson was the guy that made all the inroads for all of us. He was the Jackie Robinson. He was the Christopher Columbus. he was there when nobody else was there. And he was there all by himself fighting the battle. The racist barriers, you know, the fact that he had to play on black stations, just black music, which was then described as race music. Late great Art Russ also talked about, you know, you worked in at what they would call community stations. And he was my second mentor when I got into radio. In fact, he was my first mentor in radio, per se. My first mentor was the late Dr. Frank Banzer, who got me into television and radio when cable vision came. Frank was the first African-American to host a sports cable show. And then I was sort of Larry Doby as he brought me right on in. Big game today by the Jets. We're looking for Ralph to call us, Ray to call us. So I'm thinking he's maybe having some problems how to get through with us, so he eventually will be getting through. This past Wednesday, though, special organization had an affair where they were giving out turkeys to the people in the neighborhood, and one of the guys that was there was none other than Ed Randall. And, you know, Ed is a prostate cancer survivor, and he has one of the top baseball shows. But he talked about some things that were very unique and that we would discuss here. We're going to listen in as we talk to one of the giants in the game of baseball, one of the top announcers, one of the top baseball shows, none other than Mr. Ed Randall.
Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network, the show. The gentleman here is just that, a gentleman, a class act, and a credit to his race, the human race. And Ed, it's always good to see you. Ed, you know, you've been around the game a long time, and I'm a little disturbed by this thing now of postseason. I think there should be a designation between World Series and postseason. What you do in the playoffs should not be counted the same way as happens in the World Series.
Right. I agree. It's a new season, and it's been weird to me always that, like, guys who, you look at their accumulation of, say, of their regular season home run, and whatever they did in the postseason doesn't count. It's really odd. You know, Mickey Mantle hit, 18 World Series home runs. Doesn't matter. He finishes at 536. It's crazy. Pujols, the speculation is, he may not stay in St. Louis. Your thoughts on Albert Pujols?
I think at the end of the day, he's going to stay in St. Louis. And I hope that he stays in St. Louis, just like I hope Joe Mauer is going to stay in Minnesota. They are such overwhelming presences that they need to be there. God knows if Mauer had ever come out onto the free agent market, he probably would have gotten an excess of $200 million because the Red Sox needed a catcher, the Yankees needed a catcher, and I think the bidding would have been historic. I think Pujols will stay. I do think he's going to get a lot of serious bids from places like Miami, from the Texas Rangers. I think there will be four or five teams that will legitimately try and get him. But you're talking here about probably at the end of the day, his representatives want more than what Alex got when Alex was on the free agent market, which was $275. I don't know how many problems, offered his resignation, and the entire team said, absolutely not, we're not going to accept it. Management said, no way. The players were four square behind him. He's gone to two consecutive World Series. Their farm system is loaded, and there's no reason to think that they won't continue to be what many believe to be the best team in the American League.
Derek Jeter, can you say enough about it? The 3,000 only I can do it, but Derek Jeter symbolizes class, character, all that you say about not only a Yankee ball player, but a real life role model.
Well, I don't think you can separate his citizenship. You can't separate his citizenship from his on-field play. And there are very few guys, I think, that you could say that about. Not just now, guys that we've seen in the last few years, but guys going back 20, 30 years that are just extraordinary people. And this guy is extraordinary. The way in which he represents the uniform, the way in which he represents the sport is just exemplary. To think that this guy, a single guy, has been living in New York, playing for arguably the most famous sports franchise on the planet, with all of the media attention, and this guy has been squeaking clean. That, to me, is as great an achievement, in my mind, as him getting 3,000 hits.
Yeah, you see the saying of the Buck so well that Joe Torre said, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and you are one of the role models and one of the class acts of our business. It's always good to see you, my friend, and regards to you from Dusty Baker.
Doc, my man Dusty Baker, love him to death. Johnny B. Baker, you have a wonderful holiday season and a safe and happy New Year.
Your friendship is one of the blessings I'm thankful for. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you so much, Doc. Great being with you always.
Yeah. You're the best, Ed. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports in Depth is showing you. Ed Randall is also a prostate cancer survivor. Ed has his Fans for the Cure teaming up against prostate cancer, and you want to get to Ed and help in the fight. You can reach him at 917-856-7575, 917-856-7575. 4-5, excuse me, and we're here in salute of Cesar Prescott, area scout and supervisor for the New York.
Carried away there. That was this past Wednesday, and once again the Cesar Prescott Foundation. Give out the turkeys. It was really you like to see that. Ed, here's a guy. One of the top baseball people up here in the Bronx, emceeing the affair. Prescott is a area scout and supervisor. They've been giving out turkeys to the people in the neighborhood, and also got a chance to talk to Ed. Also, Omar Minaya was there, and Ray Negron. And later on down the line, we'll do our baseball special. We're going to talk to one of the Yankee pitchers. Wow, really tall guy, and had a really good rookie season. But that was Ed Randall. And once again, we want to salute Cesar Prescott and his organization, who made sure that Thanksgiving was a very good Thanksgiving for everybody. We hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. Jets, J-E-T-S, Jets, a big game today. I'm waiting for Ray Vela to join us. When he does, just shout at me, Ray, if you join us. He's working with Ralph Paliagua today. Last night I told you I want to thank Ralph. We have Ralph next week, but they had the HBO 24/7 in Espanol. Dusty would have been in his vineyard there. They started playing music, had a little food to eat. We'll see when he's going to join us, too. When soon he gets in, we'll see when he let me know you're here. Rooney, Larry Hardesty said something today, and we're going to talk to Larry. And he said Sanchez has the ability, and we sit there and we talked about the predictability of the offense for the Jets. And at this time, and we've said it for so long, somebody has to take responsibility for that. And I guess that's where Schottenheimer comes in, more so than the quarterback. But Larry said something today, Mel Cassell, is that the one thing about Sanchez, he is a great fourth quarter quarterback, and he has the ability to wipe out the past three quarters of negativity and come around and do the job, and he did it today.
Well, Doc, the thing about Sanchez is that he has what all great or future great quarterbacks have to have,
which is a very short memory. And like you said, he had the ability to wipe out the... But he and the team were getting booed early in that game, and rightfully so. He had the ability. One thing I like about the kid, Doc, is the kid doesn't wilt come crunch time. If you give him some time, you know, Doc, he's the type of kid that right now in his learning stages, they just don't want him to blow the game. They want him to try to manage the game comfortably, okay? By the way, Classical Burst seems to be his new security blanket for the most part. Classical helps him out a lot. A lot of times when he's facing much adversity, he'll just draw it up the big 6 foot five and let him go get it. The kid has some talent, Doc. It's just that the reason that he looks like he has regressed this year for the most part is that the offense as a whole has. They didn't have to, they haven't been able to run the ball. They haven't been able to pass the ball. And they haven't been able to protect the quarterback. All three of those things are so good for an offense in the NFL. However, today they were able to make the big play when they needed to. They were able to give them enough time, and the kid did not roll under the pressure. So I would say, Doc, that all in all, the kid came through in crunch time, you know, when he was most needed.
Yeah, and also the guy that you like so much and who also put up and didn't have to shut up, Santonio Holmes, once again, in that same spot in the zone that he won the Super Bowl for the Steelers a couple years ago, there he was, prime time, right there, touchdown, game, set, and match.
Well,
you got to take
that
up to Holmes.
You can't forget Holmes, Doc. You can't, as much as Classical seems to have been, you know, a security blanket now, you know, for Sanchez, and he's getting more and more comfortable. Holmes has been just as big a security. Those two guys makes his life a heck of a lot easier. And I'm sure that he would say that.
No question about it. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Vitanova, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports and Depth is the show. JETS Jets came through with a big win today out at MetLife Stadium. And it was a huge win, as a loss today would have really eliminated any real hope of the playoffs. Right now it's slim and none, but a loss today would have really put it there. Let's go into the locker room one more time. We're talking football. And my good buddy, and really class act too, number 38 from the Jets, the fullback, John Connor, JC, talks about today's game and how big it was.
You just can't say enough about the resolve of this team. Doc Kelly, Sports Network on the Blake River Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Network the show. I mean, you know, this was a game you had to win, and you guys always seem to have the ability to win the games you have to win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It was a must-win for us, you know, do or die. And, you know, Buffalo was coming in with the same type of situation, so we knew they were going to bring their best game, so we had to bring our best game, and luckily we were able to overcome some obstacles and get the victory and the win.
You got to be impressed, too, you know, a lot of talk about your quarterback, but you came through big time, prime time. Really had outstanding second half stats when you needed them.
Yeah, that's how you test people. You know, when things aren't going your way, you know, Mark, he fought back in the end and, you know, did some good things, made some huge completions, and we were able to win the game.
JC, you know, good win here today. We got Philadelphia playing against New England, so things could really work for us. How are you feeling now, you know, physically? Where are you at about this time of the year?
You know, this time later in the season, you start to get a little sore, but this is the time where you really got to take care of your body and make sure you're as healthy as possible going into the week. So that's my main thing, just make sure I'm staying in the cold tub and getting stretched out and you know, just taking care of my body going into these last few weeks that are huge for us.
Defense came through, didn't for your offense, got them the points. Defense did the job.
Yeah, absolutely. They came through the end, made a huge stop, and you know, we got the win.
Nothing like a W.
Nothing like it.
Best dessert for Thanksgiving?
Best of banana pudding.
All right,
now. Yeah.
Good buddy, John Connor there, best dessert for Thanksgiving, and he said banana pudding. All right, we're going to do some more football, but Dusty, you happy with the victory today? I mean, you know.
Well, like I always said, I mentioned the words, they won ugly. And a win is a win, ugly, pretty, mediocre, they won ugly, and they stayed in the race. But what I don't understand, why did they have to wake up in the fourth quarter when they didn't pick up the fact that Buffalo was deking them all the way in the beginning? I don't know if you guys noticed it, Their receivers were running long, 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 long. The safeties and the cornerbacks were chasing them, and then the receivers were then stopping and running back and getting the yardage and getting the first downs and eating up the yardage. I don't know if the defensive people or the Jets even picked that up at all, and that's what I saw. This is how the Buffalo looked so good in the first quarter, whatever it is, you know. And Sanchez not having a pocket, and that's the thing, the key. What's wrong with Mark Sanchez is not physical, it's mental, and because that pocket is Swiss cheese. And if he's not protected, he's throwing anyway. He was throwing behind Santonio. He was throwing behind the other receivers, not even waiting for them to get set. Some of the receivers were running, not knowing where the play was. That goes to the coaching staff. So, and finally, maybe, you know, Buffalo may have gotten a little tired or got a little complacent. You know, he was able to settle down and be the Mark Sanchez that we expect him to be. There are times that I get so frustrated that I'm saying, my God, you guys are playing badly. It brings back, I don't know if you guys go back to the Weave Eubank days, where, you know.
Dusty, you're the only one to go back to that.
Richard Tarver's a quarterback. I mean, these things, huh?
We're not that old. You're the only one to go back. Next thing you'll be talking about Mike Rubley, you know.
No, Notre Dame. Right. Look, an old timer like me, you make matches. You say, wow, this is not supposed to be. This is supposed to be a young, strong team with a lot of guys from other teams who were championship winners, and we're supposed to gel and not wait till the fourth quarter to pull everything to keep everybody from having strokes and going home defeated. I mean, this is a relief for the fans, for the team, but it shouldn't be that way. We should go out there from the first quarter, man, and stop beating some butt, man, and keep everybody in check.
You bring up a point, Dusty. That so, I mean, we were sitting there in the press box, and one of the guys was saying, and you just brought up that point, and he was saying, hey, you know, you would think as we move into the third quarter, the fourth quarter,
exactly,
that the defense will realize that if the Buffalo receivers are running square out routes, well, then you got to stop them. Why are you giving them space? You got to go to the line and bump them.
Exactly.
I mean, I just can't wonder. It's amazing how you can see this in the press box. You can see this at home. Stevie Wonder can see this, and you know, and the guys on the field can't see. I think I said, you know, this is, you know, the guys are doing these down and outs and coming back to get football. Stop them at the line. It's just crazy.
Absolutely.
It's just crazy. You know what was amazing today? Something happened that I kind of didn't know. It reminded me of us as kids. You know, when you play touch football, you play the offensive defense. In fact, the great Frank Gifford, the first time that Gifford ever made All-Pro was he made All-Pro as a defensive player.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, you know, that was really amazing. That he was a guy that became known as a great offensive player, turned around and won on the other side of the ball. C-Wings, did you join us yet?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, C-Wings.
The number.
Okay. Well, okay. This was a game that they just pulled out. This was a game that they had to win. This was a game that they found a way to win, and you were there at the press conference, and the coach right away was saluting Sanchez. In certain terms, he kind of concurred with Dusty. To me, there's no such thing as an ugly win, but he was saying, you know what, he'll take it. We pulled it out. Okay, your assessment, what did the coach say? What did they have to do? What went wrong that finally turned right in this victory today, C-Wings?
I mean, it was definitely the scoring. I mean, four touchdown passes by Mark Sanchez. Like I've been saying from the beginning of the season, you have to punch it into the red zone to get seven. In this NFL league today, you can't just win on field goals like, you know, back in the days of the Giants and the Bills in the Super Bowl, when, you know, you could win kicking six, field goals. You have to punch that ball into the red zone, and you have to score. I think that's what makes the New England Patriots such a good team, a hot team now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they get the touchdowns. You have to score seven in this league today, and you have to score. The Jets did it today. Mark Sanchez did throw the pick, but he's like Larry Hardesty said, he's one of the quarterbacks that's a good fourth quarter quarterback. You can be down the first three quarters, but Mark Sanchez, as you can see in the previous two seasons, he came back. And if you look at the touchdown pass that he threw today to Santonio Holmes, that was reminiscent, if the panel remembers, last year when they came back against the Houston Texans.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was maybe a one minute, maybe 20 seconds left, and Sanchez marched the ball down the field. At the time, they had Braylon Edwards, and he threw a corner pass into the end zone of Santonio Holmes, and it won the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what the and they kind of protected Sanchez a little bit better this week as well, too. He had a little bit more time to throw the pass, even though he overthrew to the wide receivers mm-hmm. on a couple of occasions.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't running for his life like he did in the previous two games. I mean, you saw the difference. I mean, I think the offensive line stepped up better than they did the last two weeks, but they do have a lot to work on as they go on in this second half of the season.
But they did look better today, C. Williams, as far as you're right, as far as the protection of Sanchez, because it, quite frankly, it's been a joke the last few weeks. So in that regard, you know, they did look much better in regard to quarterback protection. I just want to say very quickly, Doc, an aside, if you will, what is going on with the Sports and Death Nation Hall of Fame?
Oh, thanks. Let's go upstairs to Big C. Big C, let's give us that DocStanleySports.com. Is that our site?
DocStanleySports.com, that's right.
Dude, I'm glad you're well. You know, I think everybody knows I'm going to be eventually moving to Brazil. But the Sports and Death Hall of Fame, we've got a pretty good collection of things. We're talking football. We've got a nice collection. We've got some Lawrence Taylor spikes. We've got one of the prized possessions here in the Sports and Depth Hall of Fame is we have a pair of Curtis Martin spikes. Now, Curtis Martin supplanted Marion Motley, the legendary Marion Motley, one of the first African-Americans in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns. And I don't know if a lot of people know this. The Cleveland Browns were actually named after Joe Louis, but they couldn't be called Joe Louis. So the Brown Bomber was his renowned name, so they named themselves the Cleveland Browns. Motley was the oldest man ever to win an NFL rushing title until Curtis Martin, in his next to last season with the Jets, became the oldest man ever to win an NFL rushing title. So we have some of his spikes in here. The great Lawrence Taylor, considered by many the greatest outside linebacker ever lived. I remember O.J. Anderson said, as a St. Louis Cardinal, that when the Giants came into town, the first topic of discussion was, what are we going to do with LT at number 56? I was able to as I was going through some of my stuff, an autograph football by the late, great Eddie Robinson, greatest African-American coach in football history, but I was looking at one of our footballs, and on a Otto Graham called Automatic Otto Marion Motley, and the greatest coach in the history of the Dallas Cowboys, none other than Tom Landry. So we'll talk about some more about these different football things. An autographed cap by the all-time leading rusher, Emmitt Smith. A couple autographed photos by Roger the Dodger, who won the Heisman Trophy as a junior. And we also have some autographed photos of the only man ever to win the Heisman Trophy back-to-back, Archie Griffin, out of Ohio State. So those
who
are some
who I once met, I believe actually you were there at the one of the Heisman.
Well, yeah, at the downtown AC
the
club.
Downtown AC,
no,
yeah.
That was such a great affair, Rooney. That was, and I remember the downtown AC club. That was the one thing at this time of the year they would have that affair, and it was a fraternity that was so selective and so much pride, and I got a chance to meet Hopalong and Cassidy. The first, you know what, I got a chance to meet, and I have an autograph photo, an autograph of the first man ever to win the Heisman Trophy, Jay Berwinger, called the one-man gang out of Kansas. Actually, Berwinger didn't win the Heisman Memorial Trophy. He won the Heisman Award before it became known as the Heisman Memorial Trophy, because the next year, that's when Coach Heisman passed away, and it became the Heisman Memorial Trophy. But he won the award in its inception, and when it wasn't a Memorial Trophy. Jay Berwinger out of Kansas, the first man ever to win the Heisman Trophy, the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy. Ernie Davis out of Syracuse was the first African-American to win the Heisman Trophy, got drafted by the Cleveland Browns, but leukemia claimed the life of Ernie, and he never got a chance to play pro ball, the first African-American quarterback to win the Heisman Trophy, and the only Heisman Trophy winner to play professional basketball, Charlie Ward. We'll get back to the Hall of Fame down the line, and Mel Cosell will let us know, and the Big C will also keep it abreast. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Death is the show, JETS Jets, C-Wings, where do the Jets go from here? They've come off a horrible loss to a bad football team and a horrible loss to a good football team. Now, I believe they're going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. You said Kansas City is just a practice team. Can they beat this practice team after they play next week? They have to go to Washington to play the Washington Redskins. And the Washington Redskins, ladies and gentlemen, were the last team in the NFL to get an African-American player. The great Bobby Mitchell, and the owner of Redskins, was devout. Devout in his holding off. And when he passed away, he had some monies that he said, by no stretch of the imagination must this money, any way, shape, or form, be used in any way to help a situation that would combat racism. But Washington Redskins, last team to get an African-American player in the NFL, they go there next week, C-Wings. How big was this win today? Can they beat the Redskins in Washington?
Well, when I spoke to Coach Ryan today, I asked him, was this a pivotal point in the season for the team, which they dearly need to keep their playoff hopes alive? And basically the coach, he stated that, you know, we can't look at it the past or the past games that we lost, but this game here was a very integral part into the Jets moving on, keeping their playoff hopes alive. I think we can go into FedEx Field and put a hurt on the Washington Redskins. I don't think they're a team that we can really worry about playing spoiler. They have a lot of issues going on with the quarterback situation. That team is just a mess. I mean, they're like the Indianapolis Colts. They do have wins, but they're not a threat. And this win today, it helped build the confidence. Even when Coach Ryan was up to the podium, you can see a different atmosphere in the locker room. So I think this will work in their favor going to play the Redskins. We should pull out a big win. I see the Jets beating them 27-10. And that will get us ready for Kansas City, who, might I inform our listeners out there, they're obviously down against the Pittsburgh Steelers 10-3. That should be another win for the Jets. Philadelphia and beat them as well. I mean, today, after New England polished them off 38-20.
Yeah.
At first, I thought after beating the Giants last week, that's the way. Hold on one second.
Well, not only that, they were up 10-0, but you know, they're the key points of the game. And we were there with Lady A, and we're going to talk to Dustin Keller, who's one of the guys, win, lose, or draw. You can always find Keller, who's having the best year of his career right now. And they were up 10-0, and they were also driving the football with a chance to get back in the football game, which would have gave it, at the time, was they had 13 points, they needed a touchdown. And you said something that I think is true. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you can't really kind of comprehend the collection of people, with the exception of Dusty, the collection of people I have here on the real side that seriously, all of them, that what they, you have a conglomerate of some of the most astute intellectual people in any venue. I mean, they come from all walks of life. Harold Weston Jr., former world champion, the only African-American matchmaker in the history of Madison Square Garden, which is, as Don King said, the temple of a boxing. Larry Hart, the greatest African-American sportscaster ever. And he's number one, he's number one in the world. C-Wings, besides his intellect and genius in this game, we're talking about a man who is a New York City police captain, okay? He is a captain of the finest police department in the world. Justino Baby Lewis, a former police, former lieutenant in the fire department here. Little Coco, okay, a man who slammed bodies, a personal friend of Mike Tyson. We got the hoopster here, a legendary player outside of his other work in entertainment in the legendary Brownsville, who got some of the greatest athletes ever. Willie Randolph, the second baseman who never made an error in postseason play. Heavyweight champions, the first man who was the only man to ever win the heavyweight championship again, and the youngest, until he was supplanted by Mike Tyson, Floyd Patterson. Then you have Tyson. You have Tim Witherspoon. You have Riddick Bowe. Four heavyweight champions. No, I'm sorry. There's five. There's Shannon Briggs. There's Mark Whelan, the greatest amateur fighter in the history of boxing. Fly Williams. What a hoopster. Fly Williams, who led the nation in scoring. So the collaboration here, and also we're talking about, like I said, you talk about Mel. Here's a guy who was in the WWF, and here's a guy who turned around and had a great career also as a journalist. So these are people who know their craft and who, at this level of elevation, still have their grassroots. They did this. They've obtained to where they've gotten. They've elevated in that old term. They use the term ear button. They've earned it. And we are so glad to have him. Doc Stanley, Sports Network.
And then, Doc, if I may say, before you go through the ID, let's not forget yourself. We know you're modest, Doc, but us on the panel know that in you, all the great athletes, the Dr. J's, the Barclays, the Ewings, took wood. I would be down at the Garden. I'm sure the rest of the panel would, too, see you and see the athletes. Because we're saying, Doc, Doc. So we're not going to shortchange you either, Doc.
I appreciate
you help put the whole thing together.
Well, you know, only what you do for Christ will last. But, Rooney, you know, Rooney, I'm telling you something. You read it just the way I wrote it, baby. I like it. I want to make an error. You know, C.J. Spiller, the running back, he's going to be interviewed next with us. I originally thought it was Quentin Bailey. Actually, I thought I had the program from the Denver game, but he's going to talk with us. We got Harold here. Ray, did you join us yet?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, how long you been here, Ray?
I've been there for about 15 minutes. What's
okay,
going on?
Well, hold on. We're gonna do some. No. We'll get back to football in a minute. Ray is from the Latin Baseball Hall of Fame.
Hispanic Heritage Baseball Museum Hall of Fame.
Hey, Ray, calm down. I was gonna say that. Calm down.
Okay, I got
calm
you.
Calm down,
I got,
Ray.
I got you.
Now,
I got you.
Now, Ray, we're glad to have you. Ray, the Hall of Fame, how long has it been in existence, and how did it all start?
The Hall of Fame has been in existence since 1999. It started in New York City through an idea of the fact that we saw that the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, they were doing a lot of inductions, and we said, well, you know, we don't have a Latin Hall of Fame where we can recognize players like Orlando Cepeda, Minnie Minoso, Luis Tiant, you know,
hold on,
people
hold on,
like
hold on,
that.
Hold on. Now, Minnie Minoso, it's amazing. Minnie Minoso.
Right.
Played four decades. Minnie Minoso was the first left fielder to win a gold glove when Rawlings hands out the gold glove. Minnie Minoso was the left fielder on a team that had Willie Mays in center, Al Kaline in right, youngest man to win the batting title, Gil Hodges at first base. Second base was Nellie Fox, shortstop Luis Aparicio, and third base was Frank Malzone. Behind the plate was Sherm Lala, and on the mound was Bobby Sands. But Manny Mendoza, the Cubano, was the first Latin player to win a gold glove in gold glove history. Go ahead, Ray.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Also, you know, Manny Mendoza, you know, he played on the 1962 St. Louis Cardinals, you know.
Yeah. Well, he started in the American League. I believe he was a Cleveland guy.
Yeah, right. And he also played with the St. Louis Cardinals when the Mets first came in existence.
Yeah, 1962, right, exactly.
Right.
Right now, is the Hall of Fame still in New York?
The Hall of Fame is right now it's in San Francisco. It's a traveling museum right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an exhibition. We have an exhibit, which is in Yankee Stadium, which I know you were there.
The induction ceremony. Roberto Alomar, Orlando Cepeda, Roberto Clemente, and I think it was one more guy.
It was Orlando Cepeda, Roberto Alomar, Rod Carew,
and Clemente.
Tony Perez. Because what it is, it's the five living Hall of Famers.
Okay.
Five living Hall of Famers. And, the exhibit is in the Yankee Stadium Museum, and it's going to be there it was there throughout this year, and it's going to continue to be there because we got word from the Yankees that they wanted the exhibit to continue to be there in 2012, through the whole season of 2012.
Now, Ray, what's your title? And I believe you're working with your brother with this?
Yes. Well, I'm basically I do the public relations for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also do the I also represent La Máquina Deportiva.
Okay, so Dusty, what do you say? Come on, Dusty, come on, man.
Sports machine, tú no sabes español, chico. What's wrong with you, man?
I'm just testing you, Dusty. Come on, baby.
Sports machine, come on. Let's get bilingual here, will you, man?
And no sabes español, no sabes.
Ray, this is Virginia. How you doing?
Todo bien.
Ray,
yes, sir.
How has the Hall of Fame been received by the non-Latin community? You know, those who are not of Hispanic heritage, have they taken to it?
They've taken on to it very well. They've even some of the players that are not Latino, they've said, look, you know, we'd like to help you guys out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we like to contribute because we think that these players they do need to be recognized.
Okay, now you said that the five players. Let me say now we're talking Alomar, we're talking Cepeda, we're talking Rod Carew,
Tony Perez,
and Marichal, right?
Excuse me, who
is Marichal there?
And Marichal, yeah, Juan Marichal,
the Dominican Dandy, boy number 27, the greatest. I told him the greatest Latin pitcher. Juan Marichal won 243 games, completed 244 games, 4 years in a row, 20 wins, 6 out of 7 years. He one time hit a guy named Johnny Edwards, who was a catcher for the Cincinnati Reds. And he told Edwards he was sorry the ball got away. And Johnny Edwards said, hey, this is Juan Marichal. Marichal, don't tell me the ball got away. He said, this guy could hit a tin can falling off a table with a curveball. So, Juan, tell me you meant to hit me. Marichal, his first major league game, a one-hitter, and became the first Hispanic pitcher ever to throw a no-hitter and was the all-time winner Hispanic pitcher in history of baseball until Dennis Martinez supplanted him, I believe, with just one more win. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake, Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show. Ray, you were working today with Ralph Paliago, right?
Yes, I was working yesterday at an event at Phuket,
mm-hmm.
35th Street and 12th Avenue last night of HBO Latino.
Right. That was setting up the fight. And that's the name of the place. Now, are you still with Ralph or Ralph is gone already?
Ralph is gone. We went to dinner and he took off. He said he will be glad to be on the program next week.
Yeah, well, we'll be glad to have him. I know you got to run, Ray.
Can I ask you a question? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
Ray, can I... when you said the Latino Hall of Famers, I see the names that you mentioned were already in the Baseball Hall of Fame, but are you inclusive of all the Latinos who were in Major League Baseball, like Luis Olmos, who's 90. I think he's 90 years old today. Is he being considered to, or Luis Aparicio? I didn't even mention him.
Aparicio also. If you go on www.HispanicBaseballMuseum.com.
Okay, hold on a second.
www.HispanicBaseballMuseum.com.
Ray, say it slow. He's, you know, just say it slow for him. You can go English and Spanish, too. Just help him out. Help him out.
Okay, it's
don't be a wise guy.
Ray,
we have a lot of fun here, so don't take this
seriously. Okay, it's okay. Hey, I'm into a lot of fun myself. HispanicBaseballMuseum.com.
.com. Okay. Gracias.
Right. Now, I also wanted to let you know that the Yankees are also considering they're going to possibly build a hotel by the stadium.
Wow.
By the stadium. Yeah, a hotel called the Yankee Hotel. And there is a big possibility that the museum will be located in New York. And inside the lobby of the Yankee Hotel.
Whoa, that's heavy duty, man.
Those are the plans for either 2012 or 2013.
Hmm. Well, now, Ray, where are you from originally?
I am from El Barrio. I am from originally from the Carver Houses, 99th Street and Madison Avenue, across the street from the Mount Sinai Hospital.
You know where I'm from? 104th Street between Madison and Park.
Oh my God! Well, we're
neighbors.
Who knows if we bump heads before?
Oh yeah, we gang bang together. ¿Qué pasa aquí, man? Ponte your colors, man.
I hear you.
104.
Yeah. Gentlemen, this is all very nice and good. Keep talking. I'm running this through the computer. We can pick up. We'll get these police records right now. Running right through, baby.
Speaking of sports, Ray,
I heard you talking about Marichal. Do you remember the incident with John Roseboro?
Well, you know, and I didn't brought that up because a lot of people thought that was going to delay his interest. Now, a lot of people don't know what happened in that situation. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Ritter Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Death is the show. Marichal, Koufax. Refused to throw at the giant hitters. I mean, Koufax, it was part of his makeup, and I mean, he didn't need to throw at nobody because he could get you anyway. And Roseboro felt and took it upon himself to retaliate or to handle. So what Roseboro was doing, he would return the ball close to the ears of the bat, and what he did, he nicked Marichal on the ear, and Marichal turned around and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" And when Roseboro approached him, it was a situation of just reflex. He happened to have the bat. I mean, good thing he had Uzi in his hand. He would have shot him on the spot. But he, you know, he had the bat in his hand, and it turned out to be a situation where Willie Mays intervened, told John, "Hey, John, actually Mays should have won a Nobel Peace Prize," and he told, "Hey, John, you know, you're hurt, relax." But it was, for all intents and purposes, Roseboro started the whole incident because he was the one, Johnny Roseboro, he was the one that he kept throwing the ball back to Koufax, and he kept just missing Marichal's ear, and then he nicked him a couple of times, and when he did the second time, Marichal said, "Hey, you know, Capasso, what are you doing?" And when Roseboro stepped toward him, just to reflect action, the great Juan Marichal happened to, you know, hit him with the bat, he started bleeding. And then Koufax talked about, Mays talked about it. You know, Willie Mays won that game with a two-run homer over Sandy Koufax. And once again, to show you Koufax's restraint in throwing that hitter. So I've never understood why if Dusty hit a home run, then Ray come up and I throw the ball at Ray. If I throw the ball at anybody, I should throw the ball at Dusty. But Tom Glavine told me he never understood that. He said, "You know what, the hitter's trying to get a hit. I'm trying to get him out." He says, "So now if I strike the hit out, does he throw the bat at me, try to get me out?" And I remember Glavin said, he said, "I never understood that mindset." I mean, it's part of that Blanquito stupidity with the book. I mean, if I made a mistake. And I remember Bob Gibson said, sometimes the late, great Bill Shannon, who last month we unfortunately celebrated the anniversary of his passing, said he saw Hector Lopez hit a ball off of Bob Turley. He said a man couldn't hit a ball any further and any harder. And when he went into the clubhouse, he saw Turley sitting there in a daze. And he said, yeah, he said, you're probably thinking about that home run. And Turley said, yeah, you're right. He said, because that pitch was exactly where I wanted it. That was the pitch he wanted to hit, and he happened to hit it. And Mays came up, and Willie said in his book, you know, I didn't like the advantage I had over Koufax with the incident just happening. And he said, you know, I wound up hitting the home run. And that was the modesty of the great Willie Mays. But, yeah, I was very aware of that situation. It cost us the pennant. It cost us the pennant because Marichal got suspended for an inordinate amount of games. And, you know, Marichal was automatic. You know, days that Mays would take off would be the days that Marichal pitched. That cost us the pennant. So in some ways, Johnny Roseboro was victorious because Marichal got suspended, Marichal got fined, and the Giants lost the pennant to the Dodgers in 1963 behind that incident. Yeah, I remember it well. Remember it well.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports Network, the show. Ray, if you got to run, we understand, but we want you back next week, and if you can join us. And,
yeah, sure, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Hey, listen, is there any one thing before you leave you want to say, you want to convey to, as Rooney would say, the Sports and Deaf Nation?
Like, what do you...
You want to say special about the Hall of Fame? Is any special thought on your mind?
Well, I want to say that the Hall of Fame is, the Hispanic Baseball Hall of, Baseball Museum and Hall of Fame. It's already been in existence for 10 years, and, you know, we've been in the hunt for a building, and finally our dream is going to come true. I mean, you know, if we get a space in the Bronx, you know, near Yankee Stadium, I mean, it's going to be there, you know, all the fans can come, all the Hispanic Latino fans and people who are Latino can come there and see the museum, you know, and spend time there before the game and after the game.
Mm. And then you can't have it at a better location than in the Bronx near Yankee Stadium. And so it's going to be in an area where the Latin community can also house it, enhance it, and be more aware of the rich history in the game of baseball.
Of course. And you know, we have thousands of memorabilia, you know, to put in the museum. So it's going to be interesting.
Mm. You know, one of the things that you talk about memorabilia, and I treasure, you know. Good, Rick.
Yeah, you know, I'm talking about, you know, stuff that's been, you know, signed and history and pictures and all kinds of stuff that's going to be very interesting for the young people to see, they'll be able to experience, you know, the Latin history, you know, mm-hmm. of the baseball.
Yeah, you know, the thing, and this was a great segue, I could say Rooney a little time here, Mel Cosell, and my Sports Network Hall of Fame. Some of the things I'm most proudest of is I have a pair of batting gloves and an autographed bat from Jose Canseco, who was the first player ever in the history of baseball to do 40-40, and same thing with a bat and gloves from Alex Rodriguez, who to date is the only infielder to do 40-40 in history of baseball. And in baseball, only four players have ever hit over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and got 3,000 bases. The first, the incomparable Willie Mays. Number two, Hank Aaron. Number three, the incomparable Eddie Murray. And number four, the only Hispanic in that club, Rafael Palmeiro. So those are some of the things from a Hispanic standpoint of view that we have here in the Hall of Fame. Ray, I know you got to run. We want you back here next week at this time. And we want to thank you and also let you know that this year is your home. You need something to be told. You need something to be expressed. You need help. Sports and Deaf Nation is here for you. And please, join us next week as we're going to do a Latin special. And thanks for finally, you know, we've been trying to get you for about, 17 years now, Ray?
Yes. Listen, let all the fans know that they can check out the exhibit at the Yankee Museum.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be there throughout the whole season next year.
Okay. And like I said, we'll be back with you. Come back with us next week. And thanks for being with us, Ray.
Okay, great. Fantastic.
Yeah, and Ray, send me my pictures.
Yes, I sure will.
Ray, thanks so much.
Okay, talk
thanks
to you
so much for being with us. Tell Ralph we'll have him next week with you. And thanks for finally catching up with you, Ray. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, yeah, finally. Thank you.
Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake.
Good luck, Ray. Take care.
Rainbow Soul is the... Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake. Rainbow Soul Sports Up is the show. Rainbow Soul is the station. And, you know, I remember when Ray first started this thing. And I'm trying to say, I think the first Hispanic player to get 3,000 hits was none other than Roberto Walker Clemente. And, as you know, it was Clemente's last hit. It was a double he hit. And that December, Roberto Walker Clemente, who said, anytime you have a chance to do something to help somebody and you don't do it, you're wasting your time on earth. Clemente went down on an aircraft that was going to aid some victims from an earthquake in number 21. And Latino Sports Magazine is making a move to hopefully have number 21 retired. And they just feel that it's a number that should no longer be worn in Major League Baseball and definitely by any Latin players. So it's a move that Latin Sports Magazine is champion. I can understand it, and I don't think anybody played right field better than Roberto Clemente. And, you know, Clemente was a member of the greatest possibly minor league team and the team in Puerto Rico. The team in Puerto Rico had in left field Monty Irvin, Willie Mays in center field, and Roberto Clemente in right field. That's enough by itself. At shortstop was a young phenom by the name of Don Zimmer, and on the mound, pitching every fourth day, was another major leaguer, Preston Gomez. Hello? Okay, Doc Stanley Sports Network, the Blake Rainbow Soul, the Channel Sports Network, the show. We thank Ray for joining us, and we also like the little Latin music played in the background. We're going to move into the second half of the show pretty soon. Real quickly, I wanted to apologize. Something happened today that you know, C-Wings, that is rare. A offensive player making the adjustment, and that was the day by C.J. Spiller, because for a long time, running backs were just seen as guys that could carry the ball, not catch the ball. Joe Montana, one of the great things he did was he used to throw to his Roger Craig, his back, and Jim Brown, ironically, the great fullback, the Mack truck that ran like a Porsche, showed that a back could also catch the football. CJ talks to us after this critical loss to the Jets today, and we're just going to listen to an outstanding football player as, once again, the Jets, the big winners today. But let's go into the visiting locker room and talk to the guy who drafted first round, ninth overall in the 2010 draft. He's the fifth pick out of Clemson, and he's 19th Tiger draft pick in school history. And his NFL awards, he was AFL Special Team Play of the Week. So here's a guy that's wearing it the hard way. Let's, ladies and gentlemen, C.J. Spiller of the Buffalo Bills.
I thought I played pretty well. I had one, you know, miss air, you know, lack of communication, but we can hear. But other than that, I thought I played well. You know, they were blessing, picked up blitzes. You know, I knew they were going to, you know, start running a couple of plays. They did it. Coming to the game, I knew they wouldn't want me to get outside. So, I just told my guys, just give me a crease. I'm going to have to cut it up. And, you know, they did that. So, I guess I didn't do enough to, you know, help us win.
CJ, after the game.
Did you want to stay in the backfield?
First I'm a running back. When we had guys go down, coaching staff just came to me asking me, would I be willing to go out there and try to, give us a deep threat. And, to me, it's nothing cocky, but to me, I really don't see too many guys that's, DB-wise that's going to be able to match my speed. So, I took it as an advantage, to be able to get on the field, play some plays, help me out, see how DBs play. So, it was a great experience for me. And if they need me to go back out there, for whatever reason, I'd be willing to do it.
Is there an adjustment you have to make?
For what, running back?
No.
For receiver?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I'd have done it, spurts throughout, my whole playing days since high school, and then did it in college. So, you know, it was some technical stuff, you know, making sure I'm getting the right depth on the route, being precise with it, not giving away my route, you know, because you got some great DBs, some pro bowlers that I went up against. So, you know, that was really the main adjustment, just trying to be disciplined on the route running. Thank you.
It's CJ, yes, you know, just lost, but it's not the end of the season with Buffalo.
No, well, no, we still got, I mean, from my understanding, we still got more games left on the schedule. You know, last time I looked at it, I thought we had some more. I might be wrong. I have to go double check, make sure. So we're going to keep fighting. We're going to come back to work, and, you know, we're going to just learn how to finish. You know, we played great. You know, it was overall, you know, team effort, but at the end, we just didn't come away with the W.
CJ, you know, you talked about these guys. They're kind of physical, kind of in the mouth type of club.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, it was you know, a physical game. I thought we did a great job of being more physical this time around than, you know, what we did last time. So we just got to, you know, build on that and, you know, just play physical ball from here on out. You know, and then at the end, just come away with a win.
Last question. Any particular reason why you wear the number that you wear?
Wardner. You know, I grew up a big Florida State fan, and, mm-hmm. you know, I love what he was doing both on and off the field. So I started winning 28 with my end of my freshman year, mm-hmm. and then all the way to now.
Well, you're doing it no shame, my man. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
C-Wings, that move of him going to that flanker spot, does that present problems for defenses? Cedric?
I mean, when you have a defensive team like the New York Jets, I don't think he's that much of a threat. I mean, even though he was the top rusher for the Bills today, filling in for the injured Fred Jackson, mm-hmm. he rushed 19 attempts for 55 yards. Really no big standout, mm-hmm. but he was relevant in the game. But when you go up against a team like the Jets with that type of defense, I don't think he really scares them that much. They really contain the team today.
This loss today, did this? I felt that whoever won this game stayed alive, and whoever lost the game is done. We got to take a break here. Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports and Depth is the show in the background. My man, Stanley Turnsey. We're going to take a break, come back. Next hour, we'll have some interviews. We'll talk some more boxing. Harold Weston Jr. here with us. We want to thank Ray Avila for joining us from the Hispanic Hall of Fame. This little baby, Lois Mel Cosell. C-Wings, Harold Weston Jr. and yours truly will be back. We're going up in the control with Big C. We'll give us a little commercial break. We'll be back in just a minute. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network. We are hoping everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Birthday wishes going out to my niece, Christine Beanie Weenie, who celebrates her birthday today. And with that, it is time to go to Big C and a break.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world. To the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports in Depth is your show. The crew is all here. Okay, they're pulling right back up. The Steno Babies, Lois Mel Cosell, Harold Weston Jr., Sea Wings. We had Ray Avila with us earlier from the Latin Baseball Hall of Fame. The voice that brings us on, the greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, also the ESPN sideline reporter, a very big football game. It seemed like the Jets, with about 5 minutes left to go, weren't rushing enough, but it seemed like they did play the clock right, not giving Buffalo enough time to get the ball back and score, so it kind of worked out for them perfectly. But Larry got a chance to talk to us about this victory, what it means, where the Jets are going, and how it shapes up here. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Larry Hardesty.
Throughout the diaspora, United States, Caribbean, the world. That's what this is about. The Blake Radio Network. Came from the greatest ever do it. Larry, season saved for a week? At least for a week. Look, the Jets have to, they're in a tough spot. They have to win all their conference games minimum. You know, they had to win today. They've got another win, the game obviously against Kansas City in a couple of weeks. They got to win, and the end of the season in Miami, and Jets fans will be sweating about that one. So they have to win their conference games, Doc. There's no question about that. And they need to win them all. 9-7, 10-6 may not get it done for a playoff spot in the AFC. You look at what's going on in the North. You've got Cincinnati with four losses. You've got Pittsburgh and Baltimore battling it out. One's going to win the division. One of the wild cards are going to come from there. There's no wild card going to come from the West. Whoever wins the division is going to go out there. And then, so the wild card, if the Jets want to get a wild card, they have to win all their games.
You know, Larry, you talked about how things have changed. New England, big day today for the Jets. They're playing Philly, who's now leading 10-0. But you know, them losing don't mean nothing. You're talking about other teams, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, and the Ravens.
The only thing the Jets can do now is they have to win their games. You do what you're supposed to do, and you worry about what other people do later. So they won today, luckily. Next week they got to go in against Washington. They have to have the same desperate play of execution, Doc. They need to win these games because when they come back here on Christmas Eve against the Giants, which is probably going to be, that's the only over 500 team they're going to face as of right now, is the Giants on Christmas Eve. You look at the Giants, they may need that game with all the injuries. They've got New Orleans tomorrow night. They don't have Ahmad Bradshaw. Their running game has been suffering without him. You know what? Let me just take a step back for a second.
Step back, Larry. Step back.
Find the Christmas wish. It would be to be Ahmad Bradshaw's agent. He's going to get paid. Okay, you look at how the Giants' running game has suffered since he's been gone. Brandon Jacobs talked a lot, has been unable to produce.
29 yards, Larry.
I didn't want to embarrass him, but you didn't have to give the stats like that. You didn't have to treat him like that. Doc, I thought he was a good friend of yours. How you put the stats out there like that? But anyway, Ahmad Bradshaw, I would like to be his agent because he's going to get paid. But the Giants' inability to run the ball, which makes Eli Manning one-dimensional, and puts a lot of pressure on the Giants' defense to make some plays, and they're out on the field a little bit longer. You know, when you're running the ball and you're moving the clock, you're just marching down the field. Everything is good. When you have to have short plays, look at the Jet defense on the field. Look at the time of possession today. Going into the last drive, Buffalo had over 35 minutes time of possession, the Jets 17. So when you consider that they were able to win this game, it's amazing. Time of possession is a big thing.
What do you say about Sanchez today? His psyche has been thrown around. His confidence has been sort of beaten up. Rex kind of said some positive things. Did he come back to earth in the second half and maybe for his career?
He played better in the second half. There's no question about that. And in the fourth quarter, he just does stuff in the fourth quarter. Doc, he's good on drives in the fourth quarter. I don't know what it is. He's throwing the ball all over the place, low in the dirt, high and outside. You just don't know where the ball's going in the fourth quarter. Boom, he hits this one, he hits that one, boom, boom, boom. They march down the field. So, but really, to be honest, when you think about it, the ability to run the ball on the play before the scoring drive, their ability to run the ball, set up the play action, set up little screens and stuff like that. That's what he does best. When he can do the play action, roll out to the left or roll to the right, throw the ball on the move with the running game spelling him, that's when he's at his best. So they were able to do that on the first drive where they took the lead. And then, unfortunately, special teams and fumbles gave it back, and then they had to come back on the drive again. And, you know, he puts the fact that he's horrible behind him. He just his ability to forget bad plays and bounce back from them, it's been tested. He's pretty good.
Last one, Larry. Cam Newton. Been having a pretty good year, hasn't he?
How about it?
What's that
thing? Oh, you're saying he's going to be a good pro. He's done well considering what they have. And, you know, he's only going to get better. Look, this is his first year, and you understand what he's seen and everything. Now the big thing is going to be how he adjusts from this year to next year, because people will have a whole offseason to study film on him, to make adjustments where he's going to run. They're going to shut down some of those run lanes. They're going to force him to be a passer because he can run the ball. can't throw it and just wants to run it. He wants to throw it. But, you know, to force him to be just one-dimensional, that's what you want to do if you're him. Because you look at their weapons, they got Steve Smith at one receiver. And
no move. We're going to second half of Larry. The point that Larry was making was very simple. He said they have Steve Smith at one receiver. And, yeah, who is the other receiver? I mean, who does Cam Newton have to pass the football to? So he's done an outstanding job throwing to one receiver, an outstanding job with defenses knowing he can't go but to one guy. And let's listen to part two of Larry the Legend Hardesty.
Cam, a thrower, not a runner, because a runner, he can just disrupt your whole situation, your whole secondary, your whole defensive front. As a passer, you can pretty much control where you want him to go. You can take certain things away from him, give him certain things. So you want to make him a passer.
Is he the second Michael Vick?
Not as fast as Michael Vick. I like Michael Vick. I like Michael Vick's ability to run. I think Michael Vick is more effective passing on the run from what I've seen from Cam. I haven't seen a lot of him now, just from what I've seen. But from what I've seen, he's more effective. I thought Michael Vick's more effective on the run and can gain more. But Cam Newton, you know, bigger. He's going to be good. He's going to be real good once he learns how to play the game. He doesn't even know how to play the game yet.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest to ever do it, Larry Hardesty, ESPN sideline reporter, greatest African sportscaster in the history of New York City Radio, which makes him the best ever. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Depth, the show. Just with a big win here today. Save their season, as Larry said, at least for a week. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports and Depth, the show. JETS Jets for one more week.
We're going to do a little more football in a minute. Cam Newton is a guy that you like, Mel Cosell. Is he still your rookie of the year right now?
Yeah, Doc. The kid's going to be one of the greats. You know, I can't wait to see what he actually looks like in a few years with a little bit of maturity experience. And when they actually have, a team around them, as you said, a couple of receivers that can kind of be a security blanket. A really good running game. I like to see what it looks like, Doc, when the pieces are around him. They can get the pieces of the puzzle to fit around him, and then he can really do his thing. I'm anxious to see how he looks.
Dusty, your thoughts on Cam Newton?
Well, like I said, he's MVP material, and he's shown, he has not shown that nervousness from the amateurs to the pros. Mm. It's almost like he's been here all along.
Why is that, Dusty?
Because I watched him in college, and I watched him how he performed, and the way he performed in college is the way he's been performing here at a higher level. Because he knows his receivers are zilcho, and he has to do most of the work himself. Watch out for this guy when they get receivers and running and tailbacks, when he can stay in that pocket and start firing that ball. He has a rifle arm. If you look at the Tom Brady's, in fact, I watched him today, this man is a ring general, and he directs his players where to go with his non-throwing hand. You should see how he directs the receivers where they go and signals them when he's going to throw the ball. And that's what makes a tough, hard quarterback. If Cam Newton, with all his credentials and talent and know-how, can merge to that level, well, he's going to be hard. He's going to be hard to beat or replace, because the man right now, and I think you said it, Mel, about this is his freshman year. You know, how is he going to do in his sophomore year? You know, is he going to be better, or are they going to figure him out and they're going to trap him? So, you know, but right now he's a novelty, and they haven't been able to figure him out. Right now the films of this season are going to be studied for next season, how to stop Cam Newton. And, you know, he's like there's a wanted poster on his back, you know. Right now he's unfigurable, whatever that, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, say it in Spanish, just say, that's no problem, say it in Spanish.
Un misterio. because he does so many crazy things. I think I told you, he's a 5-in-1 person. He's the quarterback. He's the tight end. He's the tailback. He's a wide receiver. He's a punt returner. He's everything.
You know something, Dusty, not to interrupt you, but you know what he is? He is what a guy, the late wrestler, used to be in the wrestling profession, a guy named Eddie Guerrero, the late Eddie Guerrero, who basically could do anything in the ring. That's what Cam Newton is. The guy can basically do anything on the field.
But the drawback here that he was signed as a quarterback, and that's what he has to develop to the nth degree to be at the level of a, again, I'm not glorifying him, but as an example of a Tom Brady. But right now, out of desperation, since he did this in college, he's been given the green light to do all these other things, you know. Another quarterback, and you guys may not like him, is Tim Tebow. This guy has had to do all the things that Cam Newton has been doing because his receivers and all those guys are not really that well versed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is what I'm saying. Fortunately, they're talented enough to say, hey, I can't find a receiver, let me scramble. Hey, I can't find somebody to go into the end zone, let me go into the end zone. Let me take my lumps and let me go into the end zone. And that's basically why Cam Newton is, you know, he's a thinking quarterback. And this is, again, it may seem negative, why I'm parlaying the same thoughts, even though he's a three-year man, to Mark Sanchez. He's not a thinking quarterback at times. He goes into a panic situation. This is my observation. And he throws behind the player. He throws over the player. He throws INTs without thinking of what the heck he's going to do. And in a sense, Cam Newton, in a sense, is a little way ahead of Sanchez, even though Sanchez is a three-year man. But, you know, so we'll see. We'll see. Right now, this whole season is wide open. We don't know who's going to wind up at the, even though we talk about Green Bay, but we don't know what's going to happen to Green Bay. Green Bay didn't look too good last time in the last game, even though they did beat the team. That's basically what Cam Newton.
Well, you know, Detroit game was a big game.
Technician.
Yeah, I mean that Detroit was a big game. The Detroit game was a huge game. Detroit is is a good football team. Green Bay came off a short week, beat them. Now they got all this time to rest, and they're coming again. See, Wings, you know, I remember what Dick Barnett said about Oscar Robinson. Oscar Robinson was greater in college than he was in high school. He was greater in the pros than he was in college. And Dusty had said something already, that this young man, Cam Newton, is better in the pros than he was in college. And we got, sir, how, in the next half hour we're going to be boxing, so how, we ain't forgot you, baby. I see you there throwing them jabs. C-Wings, how good is Cam Newton, and how good can he be, and how good would he be with a good team?
I mean, Cam Newton, if you look at his stats, he's to be a rookie quarterback, he's at an 80 a passer rating. He's thrown for over 2,800 yards and 12 touchdowns. I mean, he's an athletic technician. I mean, if he stays healthy and they give him some good weapons and they really gel around him, they're going to be the new steel curtain. I mean, they're going to win for years to come, especially in this tough NFL today. But he's putting up some tremendous numbers, and he's only going to get better. I mean, he started
real quickly,
from the rookie.
Here's a thought. I mean, imagine if for some reason right now, if they could put Randy Moss on the other side of Steve Smith, would that be like Chris Carter and Randy Moss back in the Viking days, right?
They put him there. You might as well just give them the Vince Lombardi trophy. Don't even hold the Super Bowl because you know they're going to win it. I mean, he's like the new Mike Tyson of the NFL.
Right.
Like what Mike Tyson was to the boxing era when he won at such a young age, Cam Newton, I see him going on the same track. I mean, he put up over 400 yards his first rookie game.
Exactly. Cam Newton has the NFL record for a rookie quarterback in his first. So he threw for almost 1,000 yards his first. He threw for over 800 yards his first two games. So he has the record. Gentlemen, staying with football, we're going to go because Lady A is not with us. But she was in the locker room, and everybody likes her when in the locker room with her charm and personality and beauty. But she also has a lot of intellect and We're going to catch her in the locker room, and then we're going to come back and talk to her favorite guy, the legend Howard Weston. Ladies and gentlemen, Doc Stanley, Sports Def on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel. Sports and Def is the show. Jets with the Dustin Keller, number 81, New York Jets, who's having the best year he's ever had as a tight end and always seems to come up with the real big catches. You think back about Justin, too. Justin, D-U-S-T-I-N, is win, lose, or draw. He reminds me so much of the great Walt Frazier. You can always catch him in the locker room. He always has time for the media. More importantly, that great line from Muhammad Ali, service to others is what you pay for your space on earth. And Dr. King, life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And is he having the best year of his career, C-Wings?
I think they're bringing his greatest potential out. As you look throughout the season, Sanchez really didn't go to him as much as he should have. But I think today really displayed, once you utilize his talents and start throwing the ball more to him, you see the results are more positive for the whole team, especially for the offense. But, you know, the two touchdown passes were very key in helping win the game. But it's also something, Doc, that we didn't touch on was the withdrew the ire of the fans as we heard the booing, and obviously the 15-yard penalty, the 5-yard touchdown pass that Stevie Johnson caught in the second, late in the second half, his touchdown celebration where he mocked the shooting of Fletcher Cole.
Yeah, well, you know, that, in that particular case, I kind of want to stay away from that. I just don't think there's really any room and time for that here on Sports in Depth. I mean, it's something that wasn't positive. And something to a certain degree that wasn't positive from an African-American standpoint of view. The other media will do enough of that. We don't have time for that. And we're going to appreciate it bringing it, but it's he did in the locker room apologize. He did say it was immature. He did say it wasn't something that he did in an intentional negative manner. I mean, sometimes you can fire a gun up in the air, but you have to shoot the lady up on the 15th floor. So, you know, it's still going to be damaged. If you don't shoot the gun, you don't have the problem. But at this junior, we just didn't want to go there. Yes, it happened. Hey, it was a touchdown. You know, he can kind of do whatever he wants to do. This is America. Doesn't mean he's going to do the right thing. That he's doing the wrong thing. He scored a touchdown. If the defense don't let him score a touchdown, he doesn't do it. But let's just let that be gone and stay away from that at this particular time. And it was, like I said, he fessed up in the locker room, apologized, intentions, one of a negative nature. But when you fire a gun, it has bullets in it. I remember Weston years ago with Lee Van Cleef, and this guy came in and he pointed a gun at him, and Van Cleef shot him. And the guy said, hey, you know, he didn't mean anything. He was only funning. And Van Cleef said, hey, you point a gun at somebody, you ain't funning. That kind of gesture was inappropriate, and in any manner in which you were portraying it, as you said, it was of a negative manner, and even more so, as I say, on a blood-on-blood situation, it should have been done, and we have spent too much time talking about it. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Death of the show. It's time to talk boxing. He's here only in the best African-American matchmaker. Hey, outside of Teddy Britton, he said Teddy Britton was the best, but the best matchmaker I ever saw, okay, was Howard Weston Jr., the son of Howard Weston Sr., mentored by Emil Griffin and Gil Clancy. There's a fight coming up Saturday, Harold. Margarito against Cotto. I think you retired off an eye injury, and yeah, I've heard Margarito has some eye problems. Are you kind of shocked that, one, he passed this physical, and number two, that he would fight with eye damage, Harold?
No, because you got to understand, when I had the operation, at that time, a lot of fighters got suspended, could never fight again in boxing with a detached retina or any eye injury. But what I did, they have gotten more sophisticated with the operation.
Mm-hmm.
I had sued New York City State Boxing Commission for not giving me my license. And the reason why, because the doctors told me when I got my operation that my operation was almost brand as new, and it was pretty much like almost new again. So there was no reason for them not giving me my license. So we argued back and forth, and I told them it's not for them to be doctors if they're not doctors, and I'm going to take them to court, and I did, and I won. But I didn't. Then I realized I didn't really want to fight no more. I had gotten my license in Jersey, and then I came back to New York and applied for my license, and they wouldn't do it. So I was sued New York, and they wanted to give me my license. But I said I don't even want to fight no more because it was this. But that the reason why he's got his license because I had the rules has changed, and that's the reason why. So what they did is that they listened to doctors who looked at his eye. And if I'm not mistaken, I looked at him 24/7. Top Rank gave him one doctor they went to, and the Boxing Commission had another doctor. So both doctors proved him that he's able to fight. But he has had a lot of damage done to his eye. I can tell you that. The way they were discussing, he had a lot of damage done to his eye. But they're so good at it now. You can pretty much, it's like repairing a tire. On a car, the hole is there. They can plug it up and you can put air into it and the car and you're off and you're driving again. So that's what they do with the retina now.
So who do you like here in this fight? A lot of people say they think he's took a lot of punishment from the Pacquiao fight. Was beaten pretty bad. A lot of people say they think that Cotto maybe has lost a lot of wear and tear. A lot of people said they thought that he has a style to beat Cotto, that he didn't have to cheat when he beat him. Your pick here and why, Hal?
Well, I'm going to pick Cotto because for one reason. Margarito has not looked good since they done found out that he has something in his glove. And so basically, with that being said, Cotto did a very good job to him when they were fighting the first 6 or 8 rounds. I mean, he was boxing. He was outboxing him. I mean, that was the best I ever seen Cotto box, that one fight. And so with that, I think Cotto is going to do a better job now because Margarito is not as threatening if he don't have nothing in his glove. Look at it. Since that fight that he had, they found out with Shane Mosley, he has been downhill since that point. Since they know that he has nothing in his glove because he has nothing to hurt anybody. He throws punches and people don't understand. He throws arm punches. He doesn't throw with real snap behind his punches with his body and behind. So that's his punches don't really weigh you down. What was wearing people down before he was throwing punches is that he had something in his glove. Now he can talk all that junk he wants that nothing was wrong, nothing was in his hand wraps. But I mean the pictures speak for itself. In the fight when he had Cotto the first time. So, we know that would happen when they caught him. Now they gave him his license again, God bless him, but he's getting his butt beat. I mean, when the last time he won a fight on TV?
Now, going back again, and I think we've been redundant in saying this, in lieu of him being caught, and we talked about this, your good buddy, Panama Lewis. In fact, maybe I should try to call really quick and try to get a hold of my buddy in Puerto Rico, Arthur LaConte. And Arthur LaConte said, people made these allegations against Panama. He said, he worked for, and you can attest to this too, Everlast. He said, a lot of times the malfunction in the gloves are done by the people who are doing the pay. He said there are zillions of times where there's less padding in the left glove than the right hand glove, and it's a manufacturer default, Harold.
Well, the gloves are made much different now. Before it was done more with horse hair. Back, and we was able to take the gloves and push the horse hair back. I mean, we did that when we was in the dressing room when they handed us out the gloves. So that was always done back in the day. But now they got more padding in it, so you can't do it like you did back in the day and push it back anymore. So that's a big difference today now than it was before of dealing with the gloves. As it's more packed. It's got a little bit more cushion to it than it did before. So I don't think it's that.
Isn't it like foam rubber that the new padding is like foam rubber?
That yeah, the foam rubber, I had checked the gloves when they first brought it out, and I talked to Everlast, you know, because those companies wanted me to look at all their gloves, because when I was at the garden, they wanted me to buy the gloves to use them and everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So basically, I wanted to see what kind of gloves everybody had in it when they started changing the gloves and everything. So it's that foam rubber type of inside the gloves and everything.
You're talking about the. Can you go again too and talk about the big problem you had when the commission and boxing was going to go through the thumbless gloves, and you talked about the injuries they were causing, and you had to wind up, you were going to cancel the whole card because the fighters kept having problems with the new gloveless gloves. Can you talk about those gloves?
No, I canceled the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, I canceled the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
What happened was at the time, they wanted, you know, like they're throwing, like today, they're throwing a lot of mud against the wall and seeing which one sticks. The thing is that nobody knows what the heck they were doing, okay? And they just took it upon themselves, the boxing commission, and say, we're going to make these gloves and make them thumbless, and the fighters are going to fight with that. They didn't ask no fighter, they didn't ask nobody who's in the sport and see what this thing can work out. They just took it upon themselves to do what they want to do. And I said, you can't do that. I said, you got to give me an opportunity to see if the fighters can work with this new type of glove and see if it works. What we found out is that the fighter's thumb got numbed in the glove after a period of time. And so when I took that case to them, they said, no, we're using these gloves. I said, I don't care what y'all are talking about. You're not using those gloves in my show. And so we went back and forth. So I called the show off. Now, believe me, I got a lot of flack from this. People upstairs,
Jack
John
Compey, guys?
Mm-hmm. No, it was John. It was John. You know, Jack Compey and Sonny Werblin. And they were cool guys. I mean, they were really cool guys. I mean, I love them to death because, man, they were my backbone. They say, Harold, you got to come up here. So I go upstairs. And John Condon was, you know, raving and robbing. How can he do this? Blah, blah, who he says he is, blah, blah, blah. So I've been, you know, I'm doing the whole show. I mean, I'm dealing with everybody. John didn't have no input on any of this. So he didn't know what was really going on. I told him what was happening, but he said, yeah, take care of it. So I did. So Jack Crumpy calls me. He said, man, you just can't. He said, what you did was right, but it's not a good thing to do. He said, because we're getting a lot of flack from the commission and all that. He said, but is there a problem? I said, yeah, it's a problem because the gloves ain't no good. And they don't want to listen about trying to. What I told them, and simply what they're doing now, I said, take the thumb, attach it to the gloves, and then you can really make it work. Okay? That's what I told them to do. They didn't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then after I canceled the show, then Everlast called me up, and they said, Harold, what do we need to do? I said, all you got to do is take the thumb, attach it to the glove so the glove don't, you know, the thumb don't go out so I can thumb them. So that's what they did. That's how come we got the glove attached. People don't know about all this. This is all things because of my eye injury, the lawsuit, and the things that happened. That's how come all these rules has been changed.
The reason
why Margarito's fighting is because of the fact that they did not know how to deal with attached retinas back then at the time. But when they started, my doctor, Dr. Schutz, who discovered knowing how to fix attached retinas, he's the one that brought up how to do it. That is the reason why guys now who has attached retinas can fight again, and that's the reason why Ray Leonard was able to fight and Margarito's able to fight now.
Well, Harold,
Dusty, back up. Get a piece of paper, Dusty. I need you to help me out on something here because I got a Spanish pronunciation here. I want you to pronounce for us because the Lehman Center for the Performing Arts presents. Now, this word is P-A-R-R-A-N-D-A.
Parranda.
And the last word is...
Parranda is like a Mardi Gras.
Okay, the Christmas Mardi Gras?
Yeah,
Christmas
Parranda, yeah.
Yeah.
I got the same thing from Leah Graham.
Right, they're celebrating the holidays featuring Felito, Felix, and El Trio Los Antes. and Lehman College for the Performance Center presents a special holiday event, a Christmas celebration featuring the unique music from the mountains of Puerto Rico.
That's right. Lo Aguinaldo and all the things that happen in Christmas.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
what it is.
But you also from the mountains too, Dusty?
Of course. Well, we're all mountaineers, man. I mean, we're in the little lowlands, and we all live in the mountains too. I have family in the mountains. Farmers. We're all farmers and ranchers. I saw my grandfather, my mother's side was Emiliano Zapata, the guy who always had cowboy boots and a big hat, man.
When you were in the mountains, did you ever like fall down? And you know?
No, I rode my horse down. Howard, let me get back to you on this thing. Is it, okay, you're right, with the detached retinas and eye injuries of those days, that was a sure career-ending injury.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know how to address it. But now with the high-tech, like you said, the high-tech situation, you can repair the eye like an automobile, this, that, and the other. But the history with Margarito, which I read, was the fact that it wasn't a detached retina, it was a cataract. Cataract comes from years of deterioration of the eyesight. And what they did, high-tech as they are today, which a normal person in a normal profession, meaning not boxing, can live the rest of his life with a high-tech operation. Because what they did was they placed an artificial lens on his eye. Now, I have compassion for the stupidity of what's going on because Miguel Cotto is not exactly a feather puncher. Miguel Cotto is out for revenge, number one. You know full well he didn't say he's going to go out and try to hurt the dude. One good shot on that artificial lens, it could blind the man, you know. And then the medical report was that it wasn't a fractured eye socket; he had a crushed cheek. I mean, they had to rebuild all that side. So I'm wondering whether this is stupidity on everybody's side just to make the fight. It doesn't make sense to me because the man's eye is in jeopardy. I've seen people. In fact, I'm going to use myself as an example. I'm a runner. I try to stay in shape for my boxing days, and I ran 4 or 5 miles a day. Now I have a knee replacement surgery where they put artificial parts and titanium. The first thing out of the surgeon's mouth is, we rebuilt your leg, you got a brand new leg. But guess what? You can't run anymore. Because if you start running, those parts are going to come, and guess what? We have the operating table waiting for you. So you can walk. You could go and do leg presses. You can do, but you cannot run anymore. So
yeah.
I'm wondering whether, you know, the New York State Commission is going to look super bad by allowing a man who's risking blindness. It reminds me of Sugar Ray Seals, Sugar Ray Leonard, all these guys that have lost their eyes. Lost their eyes. Miguel Berrios many decades ago. So I'm wondering.
What I want to say, Doug, is, and you're right. I mean, the problem is that your eye is good for you to live a normal life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
yes.
there for you to go in there and do combat sports again. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You know, they just repaired you so you can live a normal life. Now, if you want to take the chances of going there and risking get your eye knocked out again and permanently, that's on you. But the fact is that it's not really up to us. It's like boxing is dangerous, period.
Mm-hmm.
And we
yes.
still go in there, and we're going to try to win the world championship, even if we're going to die trying to win it, okay?
Right.
My point is that, you know, we just have laws in this world that, you know, you can't stop a person from making a livelihood. And unfortunately, this is what this young man can do and the only thing he can do. So he doesn't and Doug, let me tell you, I was going to make a comeback, too. I was going to keep on fighting, even with my retina situation. But what? I'm just saying, God woke me up one morning and said, hey, bro, we ain't doing this no more. And I went back to the gym that next day. And I went to the gym, told my father, I said, it's over, man, it's over. And that was it. And so basically, he can get injured, but it ain't nobody fault but his own. He knows what the risk is. They done told him what the risk is, and he still want to take it.
That's money.
That's what it's all
about. Is it also the purview of the commission to say, yes, you repaired, you can live a normal life, but not a, but you cannot, not in my watch, you're gonna box.
No, you, you can, go, you can't go do that. You can't do it. If a doctor passes you physically to do it, they, you gotta let the man go. You just can't say because of the fact that you assume. Hey, I can say right a guy that never had a fight before coming and say you can't do this because it's dangerous. Because you can lose an eye. You can get killed. All
right?
If we're going to go with those terms, then you shouldn't have boxing at all.
Okay, so what you're saying, Harold, what you're saying here is, what it's come down to is very simple. This is, they say he can do it. This is what he wants to do, Harold.
Right. This is what he wants to do, and it's on him.
Okay, now, now, Rooney, I want to go to you. And, Dusty, you didn't ride a horse. You had a donkey. Cut it out, okay? You had a mule. Rooney, you know, going in your profession, now, you listen up, we got two former outstanding fighters, two great fighters. In your world, I mean, would that be allowed with the kind of eye problem that he had? Could he work in the WWF? Did they have sort of this type of situation, this sort of incident come up with certain performers in your world there, Mel Cosell?
Well, Doc, they do that. The attached wrestling thing is not as big a problem as it is in boxing. I mean, of course, guys come down with them, you know, thumbs in the eye, get kicked in the, you know, kicked in the eye by, you know, mistake, and sometimes not by mistake. The point that I'm trying to want to make is, though, Doc, in wrestling, they have, well, at least the WWE does, formerly the WWF, not WWE, they have a wellness policy, a complete policy that, you know, deals with anabolic steroids, painkillers, things like that. As far as medically speaking, though, I would think that Harold made a fantastic point in the fact that, hey, you can have these things operated on and corrected if that should happen to live a normal life. However, when you step through those ropes after having said surgery, like Hal said, you know, the possibilities of a further damage are great, and that's on you. This is what you have to understand about what Hal and Dusty are saying, Doc, as far as their profession. What they're saying is, and it's absolutely true, you have to understand, Doc, that these are not just boxers and regular fighters. You are talking about the very highest forms of combat are taking place between the very best martial artists and boxing instances of martial art in the world today. You know, Howard Weston, there is a reason that our hands are licensed, Doc. There's a reason that Howard Weston's hands are licensed. My hands are licensed. Some of the great martial artists' hands are considered lethal weapons. If we box with you and knock them out straight up and get in some kind of street ruckus, hey, they will put us up with felonious assault or assault with a deadly weapon, because that's what they consider our hands to be. Now, I can hold, you know, the wrestlers obviously and the boxers in high self-esteem, but quite frankly, Doc, what it is, I mean, this is like professional, which they are gladiators in the Roman days going in the Colosseum.
No, Rooney, in your profession, was there, okay, Dusty and Harold, they're training for a fight, you know, they had to make a certain weight, they had to pass a physical. And was there a physical requirement that had to be passed before a performer could perform?
Yes, doctor. The commission doctor is on hand for every show.
Uh-huh.
They have to sign a bond, a medical bond. They have to have an ambulance, of some type of, you know, the usual medical equipment right there. Thank goodness you place, and Al knows this better than all of us, a place like the Garden, they have all that stuff. Then and there. But for every show, the athletic commission doctor has to be there. You know, he kind of puts you through your paces. He takes this, that, weight, whatever. So, you know, you have to have medical personnel on staff, and you have to place a bond there, a money bond, you know, and covering all that stuff. But you have to have medical personnel on staff and on hand. Because these things, I have seen guys get, you know, everybody thinks, I'm just going to veer off for something, everybody thinks that wrestling is all entertainment, Doc. And I am here to tell you not what I heard, not what somebody said to me, but being in that ring personally, those guys, speaking of the wrestlers now, will kick you right in the head without giving it a second thought. Everybody in this profession gets what we call stretch stock. It's part of our making our bones, so to speak. And being stretched consists of guys pulling your arms and legs back until either you pass out or you tap out. But you're going to do one or the other to see if you're strong enough to make it in this profession. Because 50% of what we do is entertainment, yes. And the other 50% is stone cold brutality. And I'm here to tell you like it is. Stone cold brutality. It's not all entertainment. Guys go to the hospital every day. I've seen guys injured in the ring, crippled in the ring. Unfortunately, people have passed away in the ring. So whether it's wrestling, which is considered most entertainment by the uninitiated, which I'll say, okay, 50% is 50% isn't, and the gladiators like Dusty and Harold, the highest form of martial arts and gladiators, this is not a plaything, Doc. When you walk down that aisle and walk up those three steps, it takes a lot of heart.
Sea Wings, I mean...
But you know what I find, Doc?
Okay, that's what I want. Go ahead, Sea Wings.
Between boxing and wrestling, I mean, I think boxing itself is more of a grueling, combative sport. But what separates boxing from wrestling is that, and I'm sure Mel can back me up on this, the wrestlers out of all professional sports have the lowest, have the highest death rate amongst professional athletes. The shortest lifespan.
Yeah, they do.
The
number of wrestlers who pass away before age 50 is... It was at an unbelievable rate.
Are you serious?
There are many reasons for that. I'm sorry, Doc.
Are you serious?
Unbelievable rate, Doc. If I were to list the names and the list of guys in professional wrestling who passed away before age 50, you would be stunned.
Okay, so in other words, so you're telling me, Rooney, this is something that's not publicized. This is like kept on the down low.
Well, the wrestlers themselves know, Doc, that your lifespan. Let me put it this way: there are many reasons for it. Some are, you know, so legit. Some aren't really quite. But I will say this: see, the difference between boxing and wrestling, in a nutshell, Doc, is if you have skills like a Harold or like early Mike Tyson, where you can come in, take a guy out in a minute and a half, you do it, you go home, okay? If you can knock him out, you take him out. However, in professional wrestling, you are basically asked to take a certain amount of real punishment for the sake of the show. They don't want you to come in there, wrap some guy up in 2 minutes, you know, unless you guys are, like, way behind on time, like, okay, you know, we're trying to run behind, we need to get out of here. But otherwise... But otherwise, Doc, they want you to take a certain amount of punishment for the sake of the show.
But if you look at it, a lot of wrestlers, I think, after the show, too?
Oh, wait, hold on. Again, you know what?
Is it the average?
Hold on. Hoops, are you here?
Yeah.
We got a good 10. Hoops. Sea Wings, go ahead and close that. Your thought, and then we're going to get the Hoops to here with the NBA because they're dying to hear what's going on.
Just real quick, a couple of breaking news in the world of football.
Mm-hmm.
Syracuse fired their 35-year assistant men's basketball coach behind the sex abuse scandal, the second one to rock a large university.
That was last
university.
Week that we first broke here. We first broke that right here last
Boeheim.
Week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he's gone. Okay,
he's fired. He was fired by the chancellor. And also, it's being reported that Ndakam Kansu is going to be suspended for 2 games for his stomp on the Packers offensive lineman Evan Smith during the Thanksgiving game,
which was going to cost them
upwards of $165,000.
Wow.
Well, Doc Stanley Sports Network, the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soldier Channel, Sports Network, the show, NBA, the owners have gotten together, people have been waiting with their bated breath, the Hoopsa from Brownsville, Hoopsa, let it flow. What is happening? You said if it does happen, is going to happen after Christmas. You know, put the Ouija board down and talk to us, Hoopster. What's going on, baby?
So far, I got to give you all the games. I know y'all want to see who's going to play on Christmas, right? Y'all know you're waiting to hear this. On Christmas Day, the Bulls will play the Lakers. Miami will play the champion Dallas Mavericks. And also the Knicks will play the Celtics. Those
okay,
are the Christmas games.
Okay, so the game will be at the Garden. Chicago will be at L.A., and Miami is going to be hosting or away on that game?
Yeah, they'll probably be at Dallas. And okay. Dallas will probably get their
ring. You know what? That works out really good, like you said, because Dallas will get their ring. So we're going to have Christmas Day NBA, Chicago Bulls against the L.A. Lakers, what a game that was back in the old days. The world champion Dallas Mavericks will be getting their rings as they play the team that they beat for the championship. And also here at the Garden, MSG, the new Garden, the team, the great Celtics, who won more championships than anybody else in history of basketball. 8 years in a row they won it, 11 out of 13 years with Bill Russell, will be at the Garden. Hoops, break us down. What happened? What made this come about?
Okay, mostly the $3 billion amount players will get back to the owners, 10-year deal. The players will opt out in 6 years. December 9th will be free agents, and training camp will start. Okay, 50% of the revenues. The new deal goes to 57%. The owners will get new deal up to 43%. As you know, with 66 games, making the second shortest NBA on record. The last Lillard's game was 50 games in 1999, was the shortest. And the 149 lockout, that's the last. 525 million lost players in lockouts. The owners lost 600 million.
Hold on. Could you repeat those figures again?
Which figures? The loss?
Yeah, you said, go ahead. The owners, go ahead. Those last two figures.
Owners
lost how much?
The players lost $525 million.
Mm.
And the owners lost $600 million during the lockout.
Wow.
Okay. Here's good news for the players. The players will get their checks on Christmas.
Mm-hmm. And you said, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network, the show. You said that with this short season, that watch out for the New York Knicks?
Yep. And also, got some more news. They try to get Chris Paul. They already got Chris Paul.
Yeah, what happens to Billups then if they're going to get Chris Paul?
Oh, shit, come off the bench.
Oh,
hey, Hoopster, if Michael Jordan come off the bench, he can come off the bench, huh?
Well, definitely get paid.
Hoopster, your thoughts here now.
I got more to tell you also.
Let it flow.
About Julius Erving, he made over his revenues $2.3 million.
You mean off
his revenues?
Really? How much?
$2.3 million.
Now, this was brought about, I think, did Julius file for bankruptcy?
Yes, I did. Now, I told you first on radio.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to tell you because, mm-hmm. you know, you were friends with him.
Yeah,
but you said, I got something to say to tell you.
Yeah.
And I was also brought it to your attention. But, yes, he did. And now he got over $2.3 million off his stuff.
It seemed that one day there's going to be no NBA season. The next day it was. Who wanted this more? Did the players want this more, or did the owners want this more, in your opinion?
Well, can I tell you something? Both of them lost. Anyway, they both lost money. And plus, the players filed a lawsuit, and their owners panicked, and David Stern panicked.
Mm.
So that's what happened. If the players would have forced a lawsuit, they'd have won $6 billion in court.
How much now?
$6 billion.
Had they won the law, $6
billion? $6 billion. The players would have won in court. Antitrust lawsuit. There'd have been $6 billion.
Hmm.
If the court ruled and the lockout was unlegal.
Well, yeah, and as you go back to 1994, the baseball strike, I remember Ozzie Smith told me early part of the season, he said, Mel, no, we have to strike. The owners have locked us out. The way it's set up,
right.
We have to strike. And people forget in 1994, Tony Gwynn was going to hit 400.
Yeah.
Barry Bonds was going to do 40-40. Matt Williams, Frank Thomas, and Ken Griffey Jr. all were going to hit over 60 home runs. Greg Maddux, Roger Clemens, and a host of other pitchers are going to 20 games. You know, the players were losing. So now, in this case, Hoopster, was this the situation where the players wanted to do something for the fans, and they have a sincere, in your opinion, love for the game and concern for the fans. You know, I mean, $6 million is a lot of money. I mean, to drop that lawsuit. So between the two, in your opinion, who was more sincere in this? Was it the players or was it the owners?
It was down the middle, I believe.
Mm.
I think it was down the middle. I think it was down the middle between the owners and the players.
Mm.
They both wanted to get it done. But I got to say something. You got to commend the players, Billy Hunter and Derek Fisher, and 430 players for sticking together during this 140-day lockout. You got to commend them guys. Nobody didn't break. So you got to give them some credit for that.
Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel. Sports and Death is the show. There'll be NBA basketball Christmas Day. Will be a big treat for you basketball fans. It's time to go. It's the end of the show. Larry Hardesty will be in a couple of minutes.
Also, I got something else to say, too, Doc.
Go ahead, Hoops. We got about a minute. Hurry up.
Well, you got to give Billy Hunter his due also for helping the players get a deal. Wasn't a bad line. It's like Michael Jordan and Paul Allen. They were tough on this negotiations. As you know, I told you last week on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Jordan's real tough on the players.
Man, well,
but
you
also,
know, he's the owner now, so he got a different mindset.
Yeah, yes,
Big C at the gentlemen, Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Network. The show, everybody, hold on. Live your life today. I have to stand before God tomorrow. Life goes assistant. Most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service others, the eventually pay for your space on earth. Larry Hardesty, please. We
got to
go.
Well, this concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
We're going to do a few minutes here real quickly. Sports in Depth with the mic on and lights up. Hoops, in this case, has Billy Hunter been given the kind of credit he you said he did so much for this, and you think, will he be given the credit that he deserves for this?
Yeah, I think so. Him and Derek Fisher. Like I said, him, Derek Fisher, Billy Hunter, and 430 players.
Mm-hmm.
You got to commend all them guys for sticking together. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But nobody didn't break. Nobody didn't talk to the media. Nobody didn't go back each other's back. So they bonded together. That's what you're supposed to do. You're union people. You got to stick together and tough it out. And that's what they did. They held on. They got what they want. Even though it wasn't, you know, exactly what they want, but they got what they wanted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad.
Who's
going to do?
CJ, C-Wings, the Jets. They're breathing. They're not on life support. Will they, can they make the playoffs?
It's a possibility. They would have to win. They would have to win at least the rest of their games, basically, to be assured a wild card spot. Basically, right now the Jets are snorkeling in 2 feet of water.
Wow.
So, I mean they have to win these games. I mean that loss against Oakland, that kind of set the
Denver won again.
We go to Washington next week, and since we announced, since we're talking about Washington, today marks the fourth anniversary when the NFL lost one of its great up-and-coming players, number 21 of the Washington Redskins, Sean Taylor, who passed away on November 27, 2007, as a result of a gunshot wound sustained during a robbery attempt at his Miami area home.
Wow. Sad.
So, reach out to the family there.
You know, somebody else passed away, too. Ron Lyle. He passed away.
Ron Lyle.
The heavyweight. Yeah.
Who, I mean, him and former had a heck of a fight. C-Wings, Mel Cosell, Giants lose tomorrow night. cancel Christmas?
I mean, I already hear Santa Claus packing up. They really put themselves in a tough spot. I mean, they lost a tough division game, and the Cowboys are winning. And they have to play the Cowboys twice. After playing Green Bay, after playing that tough game tomorrow.
In New Orleans.
Against New Orleans. I mean, the only way they're going to beat New Orleans tomorrow, New Orleans has a bad day. I see that happening.
Well, gentlemen, what I'm still trying to figure out is how if these numbers are correct, and I believe I'm recalling them correctly, I'm trying to figure out how an offensive line that features, well, right now, because of injuries, featuring a 270-pound back gets 30 yards total rushing.
But, Rooney, that was 29. That was 29.
Okay.
Hoopster, you
there? We're always going to get the right numbers. Thank you.
Who do you compare him to?
Ron Dane.
Ron Dane.
That's slow.
Real quickly, I
apologize. I thought bad mouth about Sean Green. Sean Green run better than Jacobs any day of the week.
Ron Dane was the last back to win the Heisman
Trophy
in the 20th century. Okay, real quickly, I just need a name. Let's do it. Who do you pick, Sally, Dusty? Give me the winner. That's all I need to know. Who you like, Cotto or Margarito?
You ask me, and I got to give you my analyses. You say yes or no, I cannot.
We got to go. I need a yes or no. Just give me somebody. I need somebody.
I have not picked anybody.
Okay. Harold, who do you like?
I like Cotto.
The Sea Wings?
I say Cotto. It's going to be a revenge.
Hoopster.
Cotto by knockout.
TKO. And Mel Cosell.
Definitely Cotto by KO.
Cotto.
Yeah,
I like that.
Okay. Cotto by KO. Okay, with that, we're going to like run here. Everybody can get their horse. Dusty, go get your mule, and we can go now. And tell everybody good night in English again.
Good night, everybody, and thanks for all the insight. And, yes, we are a posse, and I shall ride to the sunset. Buenas noches. Take care. God bless.
Dusty, can we go with you to the Grammys?
No, man, because this is a closed shop, and I'm the star.
Hey, Dusty, yo hablo español, por favor.
Yes, yo hablo español, and this is why the Latin Grammys is Latin. It doesn't say English, French, or Norwegian, Russian. It says Latin.
Dusty, is this a black thing?
Hey, what do I got? An artificial suntan?
Wow.
Gentlemen.
Good night,
love
gentlemen.
You. And we'll be back here next Sunday. Oh, well, actually, right. Dusty won't because he'll be riding his mule, so we have to catch him next Monday.
That's right. It's kind of slow.
Later, gang.
Bye-bye.
All right, later, guys.
Good night.